So, yes. And we are pursuing every option open to us. However, both men seem to have vanished. I think they're one and the same man. Unfortunately, we can't prove that. We have no engagement pictures. What about friends? Maybe a friend took a picture. Did you ever speak to Tyler in person? Oh, yes, right after the murder. I could get a police artist in here to do a sketch of him from my memory. I think I remember him well enough to create a fairly accurate one. They were close on the monster's tail. Boone barely resisted giving a fist pump. If we could compare that composite with Justin Leland, we might get somewhere. We might, Morgan agreed. Do you have the contact there in Rock Harbor for me to talk to? Yep, it's Sheriff Mason Kaliva. Boone called up Mason's number and rattled it off to the detective. The investigation is in its earliest stages here. He's called in the state police, and he should be able to give you their contact information and a copy of the autopsy. I'll get on it. It may take a few days to get a composite. We've got an FBI forensic artist instructor coming to town next week to train our officers, and she's the best in the country. I'll arrange for her to compose the drawing. By then, Mason might have more information as well. Thanks for calling, Mr. Carter. This investigation just took on new life. Boone ended the call and told Dana what he had learned. I have to wonder if any of Renee's friends have a picture of the guy. Surely they went out together with her friends. Do you know who you might call? Who was Renee's best friend? His elation leaked away. Allison. She never met him. Co-workers, other friends. He tried to think. Someone from church, maybe. I'll call her pastor and see if he has any idea who might have gone out with him. He caught her by the wrist and stared up at her. You've been a rock through this, Dana. Thanks for being here for me. Her cheeks bloomed with pink, but she didn't look away or pull away. Anytime, Boone. I feel like I've known you forever. It's nice to have an instant friend. In that moment, he realized he wanted more than friendship from her. Chapter 21. Dana assembled all the ingredients on Boone's counter and took out her container of sea salt. Working on the light granite counters was pure pleasure, and while there weren't many of the white shaker cabinets, they were well organized and held everything she needed for preparing fish tacos. Boone stood by the red Blendtec blender. What do you want me to mix up in here? Two limes and a poblano pepper. I'm going to marinate the fish in it before we grill it. She handed him a small container of sea salt. Use a little of this. Sea salt is healthier. I started using it when I went to work as a dispatcher. Sometimes I wouldn't get in enough fluid and would get dehydrated. Sea salt keeps my electrolytes in better shape. Boone turned back to his task of peeling the limes and cutting up the pepper. She should get to work on the rest of the food, but watching him was way more fun. He wrinkled his nose and pulled the blender jar from its stand to add the ingredients. I think it would be easier to go to the cafe. She grabbed an apron from a drawer, then came up behind him and whipped it around his waist. But I wouldn't get to see you in an apron. The consternation on his face as he turned around brought laughter bubbling to her lips. He started to untie it, and she grabbed his arm. Don't you dare. There's nothing more appealing than a man in an apron. His hazel eyes lit in a smile, and his hands dropped back to his sides. In that case, the laughter died on her lips as she stood near enough to him to catch the scent of his aftershave. The attraction swirled between them like an approaching storm. His Adam's apple bobbed, and he took a tiny step closer. The breath caught in her throat as she held her ground, his pupils dilated as he stared down at her. Somehow she knew she'd have to be the one to make the first move. He had that weird idea that his scars made him unattractive. She sidled closer by half a step and brought up her right hand to touch his chest. Standing on her tiptoes, she reached up to brush her lips across his firm mouth. His arm came around her and he pulled her closer to deepen the kiss. A maelstrom of emotions rose in her chest as something in her recognized and responded to his deep need for affection and approval. He started to withdraw when her hand caressed the scar on his right cheek, but she tightened her grip on him. He wrapped both arms around her like a drowning man grasping at a life preserver. All thought left her head as she welcomed the emotion bubbling in her chest. What am I doing? She dragged her mouth away and stepped back on trembling knees. I told you there was nothing more appealing than a man in an apron. Her hand shook as she pushed the curls away from her face. But we'd better get to work or I'll be fainting from hunger. He gave a crooked grin before he returned to his task. She stared at his broad back for a moment. Garrett would never have deigned to help in the kitchen. He never cared what she needed or what would make her happy. In only 3 weeks, she'd come to recognize how different Boone was from many of the men she'd met. He cared about other people, and his integrity shone through every moment she'd spent with him. When he looked at her, she knew he saw the real Dana Newell, the person inside who often felt invisible and ineffectual. This emotion she felt when she looked at him, she couldn't quite name yet. It was already so much bigger than anything she'd ever felt for her ex-fiancé. It would be easy to run to someone strong to protect her from Garrett. But that wasn't what this was. Boone's character would draw her even if she didn't have to worry about Garrett. What was Anu's shop doing open so early? Nichols Finnish Imports had been one of Dana's favorite places since she was a teenager. Stacks of Finnish sweaters were on display at the front of the store, and the scent of dye and fine wool was a familiar one. Another table held Marimekko linens, and Dana touched a coverlet as she passed. Anu Nichols, Bree's first husband's mother, owned the place. She made the best pula in town, and the aroma of cardamom and raisins wafted from the kitchen at the back of the building. Dana hadn't been to see her since she got back, an oversight she was eager to remedy. Anu looked up from attaching price tags at a table of Kaleva jewelry. Kulta, at last I see you. I had heard you had returned to us. In her 60s now, Anu was still as slim as a girl, and a few gray strands glimmered in her short blonde hair. Her blue eyes twinkled out of a mostly unlined face, though the lines around her eyes showed some of the sorrow her life had endured. She'd raised 2 kids by herself and had built a well-known business in the Upper Peninsula. Dana stepped forward to hug her. I know I've been neglectful. It's good to see you. I was surprised to see your lights on so early. I was on my way to the Suomi for breakfast before work and saw you moving around in here. I thought you might have spared some pula and coffee. It's still hot. Dana heard the clicking of dog nails on the scarred wooden floor. Then Samson, followed by Bree, exited the kitchen at the back of the store. I thought I heard your voice. Bree handed her a piece of pula. Ooh, that's what I was hoping for. Dana took a bite and nearly groaned as the delicious flavors hit her tongue. I've missed this. Anu glanced out the windows at the windswept street. I have tea and coffee in the back. Come. When they stepped into the kitchen, the warm aromas wrapped Dana in a cherished embrace. She'd spent many an afternoon here with Anu and Bree. Anu's worn Bible lay on the counter, and Dana's gaze lingered on it. Much of what she had learned about how to live a Christian life had come from Anu. Seeing her again brought back so many memories as well as shame. You look sad, Kulta. I'm just thinking of how much I failed. God. Myself. My life hasn't turned out like I'd hoped. Bree touched her shoulder. Failure isn't fatal. Giving up is. Dana smiled at her. I often forget that. She slid onto one of the kitchen chairs and accepted the cup of coffee. The light roast was a Finnish tradition, and the mild taste seemed foreign to her palate, which had adjusted long ago to a bolder flavor. Yummy! Anu leaned against the counter. As Bree said, you haven't failed. You're still here, still moving forward. God has a plan for you. I'd sure like to know what it is. Dana studied her face. You never seem to hesitate to encourage someone in the Lord, even customers. That's how I first met you. I was buying a skirt for my parents' funeral, and you noticed I was crying. You hugged me and quoted Psalm 116:15. Anu nodded. Precious in the sight of the Lord is the death of his saints. Don't you worry you'll offend someone when you do that now? I mean, the world is so different from what it was even 5 years ago. How do you know where to draw the line between offense and help? The words came out in a rush. I get terrible calls some days. I want to share a scripture with them or pray, but I get all tongue-tied thinking about what my coworkers will say and if I'll get in trouble with my boss. Anu's gaze probed hers. Deep down, you know when to speak and when to be quiet. But you are afraid to trust your instinct, and only God knows if your words will have impact. We are not told to decide who or who will not benefit from the words that point to life. We are just to be faithful with our lives and our words. If the Holy Spirit prompts you, then be faithful to what He has told you. I wanted to start over here, to be a better person, but I found myself falling right into the old ways at my job. At my last job, my boss told me I wasn't allowed to say anything about God to people who call in, even when I felt like I should pray with them as they are waiting for help. Some have asked me to pray, but I was afraid of losing my job. Anu nibbled on a piece of bread before answering. I have no boss but the Lord. Has your current employer told you that you may not offer comfort to those in distress? No. Dana glanced at Bree, who sat across the table from her, sipping coffee. You know Mason better than me. Would I lose my job if I spoke up with a caller? Bree smiled. Mason is a good Christian man. Why not ask him directly? Dana wanted to slap her forehead. Of course, I was assuming the worst because of my past experience. Edmund Burke said, "The only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing." I've felt helpless lately. I guess I'm really not. We are far from helpless. God hears all prayer, even silent ones. It is the biggest power we have, Anu said. Remember 2 Timothy 1:7. I will. Dana glanced at her watch. I guess we'd better get to work. Chapter 22. For God gave us a spirit not of fear, but of power and love and self-control. Today was a new beginning. Dana was determined to cling to the verse Anu had given her. Her muscles were pleasantly sore from the martial arts workout she had been doing. She hung her coat on a hook by the dispatch office door and went to her desk. The aroma of fresh coffee perked her up, and she glanced toward the snack station to see it wasn't quite finished brewing. Tracy barely grunted when Dana greeted her. Dark circles rimmed her eyes, and her skin had a sallow tone. You okay, Tracy? Anything I can do for you? Tears filled Tracy's eyes, and she shook her head. Rough night is all. Dana started to walk past her, but her new determination to speak up stopped her. Can I pray for you? I'd like to help you. Tracy's eyes widened, and red washed up her neck. I'm fine. Just leave me alone. I don't need your pity. It's not pity I'm offering. She put her hand on Tracy's shoulder and kept it there even when the other woman tried to shrug it off. I'm here if you need anything. She left Tracy and turned to meet Karen's speculative gaze. Ready for a busy day? Karen sighed and her hazel eyes went flat. I hope it's not like yesterday. You're lucky you weren't working. We had vandals going around town breaking windows and painting graffiti. The phones were nuts. Dana wrinkled her nose. Let's hope today is calmer. Karen rolled her eyes. Don't count on it. She studied Dana a moment, then glanced at Tracy and lowered her voice. You're wasting your time with that one. She wouldn't want religion to interfere with her. Fun. I think she's beginning to realize her life isn't all that enjoyable. Karen sniffed. I doubt it. Mark rolled his chair a little closer. I'm sorry about your friend's death. You holding up okay? The sudden sympathy made Dana's eyes fill, and she swallowed hard. Thanks. Mark spared a glance at his computer, then focused on Dana again. You think the serial killer she was tracking found her? Did you know Allison? As far as Dana knew, not many people were aware her friend had been an investigative reporter or that she'd been pursuing what she believed was a serial killer. Mark shook his head. No. But you know how stuff gets around here in the sheriff's department. Dana balled her hands into fists. This wasn't something she'd wanted to get around, not until they discovered who was responsible for Allison's death, and she didn't care for the avid curiosity in her co-worker's eyes. She sat in her chair and swiveled it closer to her screen as a call came in. 911, what is your emergency? That wasn't nice, Dana. Garrett's deep voice rumbled in her ear. You set me up. Is that guy your new man? Who is he? Her throat tightened, and she quickly tried to pinpoint where the call originated. He was on a cell phone on the outskirts of Rock Harbor. Even as she watched, the location moved. He was in a vehicle. Since Karen was on another call, Dana motioned to Tracy to come help her. She pointed to the monitor and jotted on a paper, "Tell the sheriff Waterman is on the phone." Tracy nodded and grabbed her phone. Dana turned her back so Garrett couldn't hear Tracy's call. "Why are you still hanging around?" He let loose a string of curses. "I love you, Dana. That's the only reason I'm here. Nice job deflecting my question, though. What about the new boyfriend?" "He's Allison's cousin, and he was helping me out, remembering last night's kiss." She touched her lips. "By trying to trick me?" "We both just wanted to see what you knew about Allison. We found your scarf by Naomi. Why did you hit her?"
"I'm not going to answer your crazy accusations. I just called to let you know I'm leaving. I'm through with you and your devious ways. Have a nice life."
The connection ended in her ear with a click. The location of the call winked out on the screen. Was he telling the truth? Was he really leaving town? The sheriff burst into the room.
"I sent deputies to the location. He signed off?"
Dana nodded. "He says he's leaving town."
"Not if I can help it."
He waved a photograph in his hand. "I've had my men plaster posters all over town along with a description of his truck." Tracy's face paled. She swiveled on her chair. "Can I see that a second? He looks familiar." She took the poster from Mason and studied it. "He told me his name was Jarrett Mannon." Her voice choked off.
"Where'd you see him?"
Mason demanded. "At my brother's bar. I work there a few nights a week. This guy came in just after you moved to town. We started talking. He didn't have a hotel room, so I offered him my spare room." She looked away. She is lying. Dana watched her shuffle and twirl a pin in her fingers. "You look frightened." Tracy's hand went to her neck, and she pulled away the silk scarf. He choked me. I think you can still see the marks a little bit. They were really dark, almost black, after he grabbed me." The faint traces of bruises marred her creamy neck. Chills shuddered down Dana's skin. "Garrett tried to kill you?" Tracy's cheeks flushed, and she put the scarf back in place. "He got mad for some reason. I couldn't figure it out, but I think I just did. We were talking about you, and even though I didn't mention your name, I said the new hire was being stalked by some nutcase. He got all bent out of shape and grabbed me."
Mason scowled. "And you didn't report it?"
Tracy looked away as she fiddled with a strand of her black hair. "He said I'd be sorry if I did. I believed him. He's a scary dude."
"I'll need a deposition from you," Mason said.
"Did he spend the night?" Dana asked. "No. He left with a final warning. I didn't ask where he was going. I was just glad he was out of my house." She turned back toward her screen as a call blinked. "I really thought for a few minutes that he might kill me on the spot. His eyes were soulless." "I hope he really is leaving town," Dana said.
"I'll notify the state boys to keep an eye out for him. If anything, this shows you're not the only woman in danger from him."
Mason headed for the door. Dana turned back to her screen as another call came in. She should feel relieved, but an unsettled sensation had lodged in her belly. The aroma of pot roast, potatoes, and carrots still filled Bree's kitchen after the service for Allison. Bree's eyes felt gritty from crying. The small church had been packed with grieving people, and Allison's poor parents had been devastated. Only the Lord could bring comfort in a situation like this. Her lips compressed. Laurie slammed the drawers and cabinets as she helped clean up the supper mess. Zorro lay in the middle of the kitchen, not far from her. Bree exchanged a commiserative glance with Dana over Laurie's bad humor. Bree put the last plate in the dishwasher. "You're free, Dana, and I can finish." Laurie still looked about 16 instead of 23 in her skinny jeans and red sweater. She'd kicked off high heels before helping clean the kitchen, and her bare feet made her look even younger. She tossed the dish towel onto the counter. "I don't know why you made such a big deal out of my engagement.
I'm not a kid anymore. You and Kate are smothering me.
Kate is just looking out for you. He's done it too long to stop now. Peter is a lot older than you.
13 years older isn't all that much.
Laurie slipped her heels back on and turned toward the living room. She paused and turned back to face Bree a moment.
You'll see how perfect he is once you've met him.
I'm sure he's a nice guy.
But Bree wasn't sure. Not at all. Laurie had a habit of always picking the worst guys.
While she'd love to see Laurie happy, Bree wasn't sure she was grown up enough for that kind of lifelong commitment.
Maybe in another 3 to 5 years, Laurie would be settled enough to think about a serious relationship.
I can see the wheels turning, Laurie said. What aren't you saying?
Bree dried her hands, then hung up the hand towel.
I just think you're awfully young.
Laurie turned to Dana.
You haven't been stuck in this backwater all your life. What do you think?
Dana's cheeks turned pink.
I'm sure Peter is a great guy, and from the size of that ring, he must have a good job.
I see Bree's point, though. You're just barely out of college, and Peter is mature. What if you get bored with him after a while?
You think I'm immature?
Laurie spun on her red heels and stalked for the living room, her heels clacking on the floor all the way. Zorro padded after her.
Dana sighed. I didn't handle that well.
It was the truth, though.
I think that's my major hang-up about it. I love her, but she's spoiled and willful. She's used to getting her own way. This Peter might not really know what he's in for.
Bree forced a laugh, but she felt like crying.
Laurie had just gotten that new job where she had a chance to build a career and make a real change in her life. If she got derailed by a doomed romance now, it could set her back years.
Maybe he'll be good for her maturity. These kinds of romances often work.
Laurie was so excited about this new job because she got to get out of Rock Harbor. She craves new experiences and excitement.
They met at her new job, didn't they?
I thought that's what she told me.
Bree nodded, right off the flight in Kauai.
But I need to stay out of it. She's right. It's not my business, really. She's an adult, and I keep forgetting that.
You and Kate are still supporting her.
She lives here, doesn't she?
I bet she's not paying room and board, so that does give you some authority to speak into her situation, and you love her. She can hardly kick about that.
We've never asked for money from her. Kate feels an obligation to her. Their parents died when she was in her teens, and he took over as a father figure. She's always resented that sum.
I think she didn't make the shift from seeing Kate as her brother to seeing him as an authority figure very well.
I bet she'll move to her own place now that she's making decent money.
The thought of Laurie moving out seemed something to both rejoice in and despair about. Would Bree feel this way about her kids when they grew up and didn't need her anymore? Laurie was like her own sister. If she were sure she was ready for such a drastic new step, Bree would accept it. Or could she? She was beginning to realize how much she disliked change. She forced a smile.
We can't solve this one. We'll have to leave it in God's hands.
How's the new job working out?
Good. I feel right at home.
Dana's smile faltered. Garrett called me at work yesterday and told me he was leaving town.
Bree studied her friend's downcast face.
Why aren't you smiling from ear to ear, then?
Dana's gaze came up.
I don't trust him, Bree. He says things to get your guard down, then moves in for the kill.
Did you ever put a restraining order on him?
She shook her head. Everyone urged me to, but I just wanted to get away. And besides, it wouldn't stop him.
Do you have any idea of how many times I sent cops out to stop a man with a restraining order? And Garrett has always done whatever he wanted.
Boone's deep voice carried from the living room as the men cheered a touchdown for the Arizona Cardinals. Bree arranged homemade fudge on a tray.
And speaking of romance, what's up with you and Boone?
I don't know what you mean.
Don't play dumb with me. I'd have to be blind not to see the way you look at him. Come on, spill it.
Dana's cheeks went pink, and she pushed a stray curl out of her blue eyes that had suddenly gone soft and tender.
I think he's pretty wonderful.
Well, of course he is. He's kept women at arm's length since he's been here. But he looks at you like you're wearing a Cardinals jersey.
Dana's laugh was breathless.
You really think so? He was really hurt by Esther. Esther was the name of his fiancée? It says a lot that he's told you about that. Dana snatched a piece of fudge, and Bree realized the probing was making her a little uncomfortable. She picked up the tray of chocolates. Let's go see what everyone is up to. Chapter 23. The weather was clear and a bit warmer on Monday, a nice respite from the constant wind they'd had. Boone waved goodbye to the last of his customers around 4, then glanced at the sky. He had time for a swim in Superior before darkness fell, and the lack of wind might make the experience a little more fun. After locking the office door behind him, he started for his cabin, but paused when Dana's blue Prius pulled into the parking lot. He waited for her to reach him. She wore a lighter coat today with no hood, and her light brown curls glowed in the late afternoon sun. "You just getting off work?" She nodded. "I should have called, but it was a gorgeous day, and I thought I'd drive out and see if you wanted to go for a hike. I've been cooped up all day and felt like doing something strenuous." Would she be game? "I've got a better idea. Come with me." She fell into step beside him. "What do you have in mind?" "Swimming." "You have an indoor pool?" "I've got something better." He gestured to the deep blue lake. "Superior?" She stopped and shook her head. "No way, big guy. You have to be crazy if you think you're going swimming in 40-degree water." "I do it all the time. The benefits of cold thermogenesis are well known. It will be good for you. I've got a wetsuit that will fit you, and we'll only go in for a little while since it's your first time. You'll jump out of there feeling like you just won a marathon." "I'll jump out the minute I put one toe in it." He took her arm and turned her toward his cabin. "I take it that means, yes, you'll give it a try." She chewed on her lip, then sighed. "It's not a good thing for a relationship when a man can talk a woman into something that extreme." Relationship. Did that mean she had feelings for him? He kept reliving that moment she kissed him and had come to no firm conclusion. When she'd actually touched his scar, he hadn't known how to react. No one had put a finger on that ugly ridge other than himself when shaving, yet she'd caressed it like it was the most attractive thing about him. He hadn't been able to forget it. He opened the door to the cabin, then steered her toward his bedroom. "There are wetsuits hanging in the closet. You'll need a small. I'll change in the bathroom and meet you in a few minutes." Before she could back out, he retreated and closed the door behind him. His wetsuit was hanging by the wood stove. It had dried overnight, so he carried it to the bathroom and tugged it on. He'd need to find her a hoodie, shoes, and gloves. How many women would do something like this? Renee had, but not many would. He had wanted to talk to Dana about that kiss ever since it happened, but he was afraid she'd say it was just a whim, that she only thought of him as a friend. That kiss had been much more than friendship. He yanked on his cap, then went to rummage in the storage chest for the rest of her equipment. The bedroom door creaked, and she stepped out in the wetsuit. His mouth went dry. He knew he was staring, but he couldn't help it. Maybe this wasn't such a great idea. She wasn't one for tight jeans and tops, but the neoprene suit showed off her curves and long legs. "I look like I'm a cat burglar." She tugged on the sleeve of the suit. "All I need is a mask, and I could steal the crown jewels." "I've got the hat right here." He held it out. Her smile faltered as her gaze locked with his. Her lips parted a bit as she stared up at him. He should make the first move this time. He took one step in her direction, but his cell phone rang, and it broke the magic of the moment. He snatched it from the coffee table and glanced at the screen. "It's Detective Morgan." He answered the call on the third ring. "Boone Carter." "Mr. Carter, I told you I'd let you know if I had any news. There's a couple of things going on here. I checked with DMV to see if I could get hold of any photos of Leland or Dixon. Neither had a driver's license." Boone inhaled. "Fake names." "It appears so. And I had Gwen Marcy do a composite as part of the class she taught here on Friday. I faxed it up to the detective in charge of the Rogerson case. He remembered interviewing Faith's fiancé and said it looked like it might be Justin Leland. He couldn't say for sure, since composites aren't exactly pictures, but he was certain enough to say he believes there's a 90% likelihood that we're dealing with the same killer." Goosebumps ran up Boone's spine. So Allison was right. There's a serial killer out there. Well, a budding one, anyway. A serial killer is defined as someone who kills at least 3 people with at least a month of cooling off between murders. These murders were a year apart. What about Allison? She makes number 3. True. Though she was never engaged to the creep, her killing was likely more out of fear. But he drowned her, Boone reminded the detective. That's reason enough to call in the FBI. Thanks for the tip on this. We might have a chance at stopping him now that we know he's operating out there. I'll have the feds cross-check against the database for any other murders with a similar M.O. Thanks for calling, Detective. Please let me know if you hear anything else. You got it. Boone tossed his phone onto the sofa and told Dana what the detective had learned. So at least they have a rough description. With the FBI on the case, too, we have a better chance of finding him. Good news for sure. I say we get dressed and go have pizza to celebrate. He tugged the cap onto her head, then began to tuck in the curls. You'd throw away all the hard work of getting that thing on for pizza? Her hair was as soft as bunny fur, and he wanted to linger with his fingers in those springy curls. You're right. That was about the hardest thing I've done. Besides, if I do this, I'll have bragging rights to being the toughest one on the dispatcher team. He reluctantly dropped his hands back to his sides. Stay in for 10 minutes, and I'll spring for squeaky cheese. Now you're talking my language. She tucked her hand into the crook of his elbow, and they went toward the door. Instead of heading to Rock Harbor, Boone had driven to Houghton, to Pilgrim River Steakhouse, a place Dana had only heard about. The food had been amazing, and the moon glimmering on the treetops on the trip home had made it feel like a fairy tale night. She didn't want it to end. Boone parked his truck beside her Prius in the parking lot and shut it off. I'm almost too full to move. Me too. She touched her curls, which were still a bit damp. I think my hair is nearly defrosted. His laughing scoff was soft. Come on, you loved it, admit it. It was the longest 10 minutes of my life, but worth every moment with a meal like that. She shifted in her seat and released her seatbelt. But I will say, my skin still tingles from the cold water. I'm sure it was good for my circulation. I think you should do it several times a week. It's good practice. For falling overboard in the winter? She could sit here for hours and just banter and talk with him. Had she ever been this relaxed with anyone? He made her feel she could let down her guard and totally be herself with him, that he liked everything about her and wouldn't judge her. Her hair and clothes had never been perfect enough for Garrett. You never know. His seatbelt clicked as he unbuckled it. She didn't want to get out of the truck. Did the detective say what his next move was? Just calling in the FBI. I'd like to do something myself, but I don't know what it might be. The FBI will be taking it over, and I doubt they'll be as tolerant of my pushing and questions as Morgan has been. Have you heard anything from Mason on getting into Allison's files? Not yet. He mentioned that the diver didn't find anything under the ice, though, and there wasn't anything strange in her phone records. Maybe you and I can monkey with the files a bit. We could give it a try after my martial arts lesson on Wednesday. I don't know how far we'll get, but I'd like you to come over. I like having you around. His voice went husky at the end. She licked suddenly dry lips as he slid toward her on the bench seat. His arm went around her and gently tugged her closer to him. Closing her eyes, she inhaled his clean, masculine scent as she tipped her head under his chin. They sat like that, in companionable silence for several long moments. Dana almost didn't want to breathe in case it upset the contentment she felt. His fingers found her chin and tipped it up just before his lips swooped down on hers. She curled the fingers of her right hand around the zipper of his jacket to draw him closer. Too soon he lifted his head, and she made a small mule of protest and pulled him back for another kiss. He chuckled and tugged her onto his lap, then kissed her until she was breathless. "We can't stay in the truck and neck all night." His words were a soft growl at her nape. She ran her palm down the scars on his cheek and stared into his eyes. Are you sure? I'm game if you are. What am I going to do with you? You're way too tempting to resist. You could try falling in love with me, she whispered. Her hand flew to her mouth. Did she say the words aloud? I'm sorry, that was a stupid thing to say. She tried to scramble from his lap, but he held her cradled in his arms while she died inside. How could she say something like that? He pressed his lips against the side of her head. I didn't think I'd ever love anyone again. But you're making me doubt the truth of that. I'm willing to see where this relationship goes, if you are. Was he just saying that because she'd been so bold? Her eyes burned. You don't need to pity me. He stiffened. Who said anything about pity? If anything, I'm the one who should wonder if your attention is because you're sorry for me because no other woman would look at me. She managed to scoot off his lap. You're an idiot. Any woman would want you. But you think this scar, she touched it, disfigures you? It doesn't at all. I think you're incredibly handsome, but more than that, you're good. You make me want to be better, to care more about other people, to make more of a difference. You're already doing that, honey. The outrage went out of his voice. Look, let's start this over. You want to explore the relationship, yes or no?
Yes,
she whispered. Phew, you had me scared for a minute. He cupped both her cheeks in his palms, then leaned forward for one more brief kiss. We're friends first, as we figure out where this might lead, okay?
Okay.
Her chest felt like it might burst with a spurt of joy and disbelief that filled it. Bree won't be surprised. I know. She said something to me about it the other day and told me I'd better not hurt you.
What'd you say?
I told her it wasn't me she had to worry about, that I was more afraid of you trampling on my heart.
She put her palm against his chest and felt his heart pounding against it, even through his coat. I'd never do that.
We'll see. I'm willing to risk it if you are. Chapter 24. The house, lavish and comfortable, felt like home. But Garrett couldn't quell his urge to pace and look out the windows at the snow blowing across the lake. Everything in him wanted to jump in the truck and grab Dana on her way home from work tonight, but he had a quick business trip to take care of first. He took out his cell phone and glanced at it. Even texting Dana would be a bad idea. She was liable to track his location. Nothing said he had to stay here, though. He could get lunch in Houghton, or maybe go up the Keweenaw Peninsula to Calumet, where he could text her before he got on the plane. He grabbed his coat and slung it on, then took his keys and went out through the garage where he'd parked his truck out of public view. The truck engine fired as soon as he turned the key, and he backed out, then hit the remote in the garage door opener. His tires crunched on the frozen snow as he drove slowly to the driveway exit. No other vehicle was in sight, so he quickly gunned his truck out onto the road before anyone noticed which drive he'd exited. His cell phone buzzed, and he glanced at the screen. Chris's picture showed. Should he answer it? Chris might be checking to see if he'd really left the area. Still, the challenge of outsmarting his old buddy was enticing. He slowed the truck and swiped the screen. Hey, Chris, it's been a while. I wasn't sure if you'd talk to me. The noise in the background made it sound like Chris was in a store or somewhere public. Hey, we're still friends, regardless of what went down between me and Dana. There was no way Chris would buy that. He had been antagonistic with Garrett ever since he'd caught Dana's eye, and especially after she moved to Washington to be closer to him.
Yeah, sure.
Garrett lifted a brow at the non-answer. What was his deal, and why had he called?
You back in Rock Harbor now?
I will be this weekend. I'm about to board my plane. I thought we might get together if you're still in town. Garrett didn't trust his former friend enough to even think about being honest. Sorry, I'm back in Washington. When you headed that way, maybe we could meet for a drink.
Chris swore under his breath. I didn't think you'd give up so quickly.
Hey, Dana made it clear we were through. No sense in beating my head against a fence post. I know when I'm not wanted. Still, I have to say, I'm surprised you called. Why would you even want to see me? You've made it pretty clear you didn't want me dating your sis.
I was probably wrong about that. I want her to be happy.
And you think I'd make her happy?
Garrett's chest expanded. Finally, someone else who saw he and Dana were meant to be together.
She's sure not happy now.
Was he talking about Scarface? He's an ugly dude for sure. But what can I do about it? She won't even talk to me.
I'll work on her a bit. Any chance you could come back to Rock Harbor if I can get through to her?
Well, sure. As long as you get the cops off my tail, Dana has them out for blood. I think I can manage that. I'll talk to her and have her call them off. It's good to talk to you again. We used to be best friends, and I've missed that. That was all you, Chris. I never pulled away. I know. I'm super protective of Dana, and I can't help it. Listen, I have to go. Talk to you when I have things worked out on my end. See you soon. Garrett ended the call and tossed the phone into the other seat as he accelerated the truck toward Houghton. There was more to the call than it appeared. Chris never did anything without a motive. He must really have something major against Carter, Scarface. He couldn't stop the grin at the thought of that nickname. Maybe he should have told Chris he was still in town. They might have hatched something together to get Dana to listen to reason. He picked up his phone and started to call Chris back, then shook his head and dropped it back in the passenger seat. Until he was sure of what was going on, it would be better to keep his whereabouts to himself. He didn't trust Chris, not really. He'd been too moody when it came to Dana. For all Garrett knew, Chris would turn him into the sheriff. Something was going on with Newell. But what? Chris had a hard side. Garrett had seen it in Afghanistan. Trust but verify. According to the old Russian proverb Reagan used to quote, it was worth remembering when it came to Chris Newell. Everything would be all right now that they were back on the island where it all began. Laurie dried and curled her hair, then went out on the balcony to wait for Peter to arrive. This had become her favorite spot on Kauai, right here on her own balcony, watching the crabs fight for dominion on the lava rocks below. Wasn't that just like life? You fought and scraped to stake out your own little piece of happiness, then had to fight off contenders. Such a cynical turn of her thoughts when she was waiting on the man she loved. She twisted her engagement ring around on her finger. Staring into the depths of its sparkling facets, she felt her spirits lift. So they'd had a little rough patch since he'd been late in Seattle. It was no big deal. They'd weather this. The doorbell rang and she sprang to her feet. Her heart pattered as fast as her steps to the door. She flung it open and threw her arms around Peter's neck. "I'm so glad to see you." His blue eyes were tired, and he looked his age. "That makes up for a long flight." He gestured to his suitcase. "Let me drop my things off in my condo. I wanted to let you know I was here before you wigged out again." She pressed her lips together. "I'll come with you. I grabbed you some groceries. I'll bring them over." He blinked, and the tension around his mouth eased. "How sweet of you." She went to the small kitchen and pulled out the bag of items she'd purchased from Big Save. He had gone on to his apartment when she returned to the door. Was he still peeved with her? She didn't get it. She grabbed the key to the door, pulled it shut behind her, and went across the street to his place. The door stood open, so she entered and headed straight for the kitchen. The place had the same closed-up smell hers had when she'd gotten there. She sat down the bag and began to empty it into the fridge. He must be in the bedroom putting his things away. "I got you eggs, bacon, milk, butter, bread, and some lunch meat," she called. "Also some yogurt and soda. I figured we could grab anything else you wanted tomorrow. I have dinner in the oven. I thought you might be too tired to go out." When he finally appeared, he changed from his suit into shorts and an Aloha shirt. The stress of the trip was gone as well, and his smile seemed real this time. He hadn't lost any of his tan in the time they'd been apart. He approached and slipped his arms around her. "Thanks for getting the groceries. The last thing I want to do tonight is go out." "You thought of everything." "I'm starving. What did you fix?" "Lasagna and garlic bread." His eyes narrowed. "Garlic bread?" Taking one look at the displeasure on his face reminded her of her gaffe. "Oh, no, I forgot you're allergic to garlic. I'm so sorry." His mouth flattened, and the sparkle in his eyes dimmed. He pulled away. "You trying to kill me, Laurie?" "Of course not. I just forgot. Give me a few minutes to whip up something else." Her mind scrambled for what she could fix that didn't have garlic. "I could make some omelets. I've got a ton of veggies in my fridge. Or I could do toasted cheese and soup. I've got tomato soup. No, wait. That might have garlic, too. I'll have to check the ingredients." She told herself to stop babbling because it wasn't helping. He seemed to draw more and more into himself the longer she went on.
She put her hands on her hips. What would you like? I can even run to the store.
He stared steadily back at her. Fix whatever you like. I'll just go out.
You mean alone?
You clearly don't really want to be with me.
She caught his arm. That's not true, Peter. We haven't known each other long. You can't expect me to know everything about you in such a short time.
I would have thought you'd paid attention to something that might kill me.
I was tired. Everyone loves lasagna, or so I thought. She tugged at his hand. Come on, honey, let me fix you something else. I'll dump the lasagna in the trash so the smell doesn't bother you. Better yet, I'll bring the food over here and fix it. Tears stung her eyes, and she blinked them back. Why did she always mess up the good things in her life? She should have remembered something so important. His blue eyes examined her face, and he finally nodded.
Don't cry, Laurie.
He pulled her into his arms and rested his chin on top of her head.
We'll muddle through getting to know each other better. I'm expecting too much too soon. You're very young. I thought that might make it easier, but that was a silly assumption on my part.
Make it easier? What did that mean? Sometimes he confused her so much. Maybe it was the difference in their ages, the way they saw things. They'd learn each other's ways and thoughts. It was a learning process for everyone. What sounds good for dinner?
The omelet idea would be great. Lots of veggies and bacon. Don't throw the lasagna away. That's wasteful. Give it to a neighbor or keep it for your lunches this week. You could even take it to work and let everyone else eat it.
He was a good man, always thinking of other people. She nodded. Let me get the food. I'll be right back. She hurried back to her place but couldn't quite squelch the feeling that something was very wrong. Chapter 25. It was nearly bedtime, but Boone didn't want to have another sleepless night, so he made no move to head to bed. Last night he'd lain in bed and listened to the clock hum as he relived every moment of the evening with Dana. The old fear had risen up and mocked him like an unrelenting bully. Dana seemed so different from Esther, but was she really? Was any woman? He'd called up every Bible verse he knew about being fearless, but he still shuddered when he thought about being hurt like that again. A knock at the door startled Spirit, and he barked. Boone put down the book he was reading and went to the door. Who would be out on such a blustery night, especially at this hour? It was nearly 10. He flipped on the porch light, then opened the door. Esther stood in the wash of light spilling from the entry. She wore what looked like a real fur coat and slim jeans tucked into leather boots. Time crawled to a stop as he stared into her beautiful face and the full lips that had once enticed him. He'd thought she was long gone with her husband. Her smile held a trace of nervousness. Don't look so surprised. Surely you knew I'd come by to talk.
We said all there was to say years ago.
And it had been 4 days since she and her husband showed up. He stood aside to let her in, which was probably a mistake, and looked past her to her empty SUV.
Where's your husband?
Dead, drunk, and asleep. He won't wake up until morning. As she sashayed past him, her perfume wafted in her wake. How did he get rid of her, and why was she even here? He reluctantly gestured toward the fireplace.
Have a seat.
She took off her fur coat and settled on the sofa, then patted the spot beside her.
Nice little cabin.
Cozy. I never expected you to leave Arizona. He ignored her invitation and sat in the chair across from her.
I needed a fresh start.
You ever see your old buddies, Tess,
Glent?
Tess and Chase are as happy as two cubs in a cave on their ranch. They have two kids now, both boys. Chase is still fighting fires from one end of the country to the other. He comes this way on occasion. She'd never cared about his smoke jumper friends before, so he wasn't sure why she'd bothered. Maybe she felt the awkwardness between them like he did.
That's good.
She wet her lips and looked down at her clasped hands. He shot a glance to the clock on the wall. Why are you here, Esther? She looked up then, her eyes luminous with tears.
I never got over you, Buck. Not really.
So you said. And the name's Boone. Hearing his old smoke jumper nickname roll off her tongue hurt like the dickens. Once upon a time, the sound of his name on her lips lifted him to the heights. No more. Her blonde hair shimmered in the firelight. and she turned those big blue eyes on him. I still love you, honey. I never stopped. I tried to move on with my life, but you're my knight in shining armor, the strong man who would risk it all for others. His pulse leaped just a little, and he squelched it. You're married. She flicked her fingers. That's easily remedied. Her lips curved in a smile. We could be together the way we should have been from the start. I know it's all my fault. I have the money to get your face repaired. You won't have to live that way any longer. Neil never asked for a prenup, so I'll get half of everything he has. You can sell this crummy old outfitting business, and we can travel the world together. You've always wanted to see Rome. That could be our honeymoon trip. Vile burned his throat, and he fought it back down. How had he ever loved someone so shallow, so focused on money, so faithless? What makes you think I still love you after the way you treated me? And you're talking trash about your husband, the man you promised to love forever. What kind of woman does that? Her smile faltered. You love me. I know you do. She rose and stepped to his chair. When she reached his side, he again caught the scent of her perfume, a familiarly sweet scent that tightened his gut and brought memories flooding back. He flinched and turned his head away when she leaned down to kiss him. She reached out to touch his chin, and he grabbed her wrist. I'm not interested, Esther. Whatever I felt for you was over long ago. I have a great life now, a life that doesn't include worrying whether or not I meet your standards. We are like oil and water. I was too naive to see it back then, but I should have known you weren't the sticking kind. You just proved it. I pity Neil. Her eyes flickered and she straightened. I was young and didn't understand things of true importance. As a Christian, you have to forgive me. Funny how she flung that in his face when she used to roll her eyes at his faith. I forgive you, but that doesn't mean I'm going to have any kind of relationship with you. As I said, you're married. Even if I felt anything for you, I would never break up a marriage. So you do feel something for me. She reached for him again. He leaped to his feet to evade her. I don't love you, Esther. I'm not sure I ever did. I didn't know you very well, and I was just as guilty of looking on the outside as you were. Go back to your husband. He loves you. He's a drunk. Her voice trembled, and she tucked a blonde lock behind her ear. If I were a bottle of vodka, he might notice me. Most of the time, he barely knows I'm in the room. So she'd just come looking for comfort from her home situation. He had to admit he was relieved that her feelings didn't run any deeper than that. I'm sorry, but you married him. I had nothing to do with it. I went looking for someone the opposite of you, someone who would always do what I wanted, who would give me what I wanted. I never dreamed that wasn't what I needed at all. He has no true character and doesn't stand up for much of anything. I suppose he might get angry if I hit his whiskey, but he doesn't love me. Not really. I'm just a bauble at his side, kind of like I was to you. Her eyes widened. Then she nodded. Touché. He started for the entry, then turned the doorknob and opened the door to the blustery wind. Have a nice life with your husband, Esther, but don't come back. We have nothing more to say to each other. She grabbed her coat and followed him. She paused as she neared the door and reached for him, then dropped her hand. I suppose you're right. Goodbye, Boone. I hope you find whatever you need to be happy. She pulled on her coat and stepped into the opening. What makes you think I'm not happy now? She gestured to the tiny cabin space. You were never meant to be alone. I hope forgiving me will at least heal the scars on your heart enough to find someone else. The door closed on the silence she left, and her last words reverberated in the room. Her vehicle lights flashed through the window a moment, and as he watched her pull away, maybe he was able to forgive her after all. Dana felt sweaty and sticky from the martial arts workout on Wednesday afternoon. Boone had been quiet and intense through the lesson, and she was beginning to wonder if he regretted Monday night. They sat in the warm sunlight, streaming through the kitchen window, as if they'd done it 1,000 times. The aroma of freshly brewed coffee would have made her feel right at home if he'd shown the least bit of romantic interest in her. She'd thought he might at least kiss her after he tossed her to the mat, but he'd just held out his hand to hoist her to her feet. She took a bite of the turkey sandwich, slathered with mayo and piled high with lettuce and tomato.
Good, she mumbled, past a mouthful.
I was starving.
Me too.
He took a sip of his coffee.
I was thinking about the encryption problem. The easiest way to get into Allison's files is to access the software she used and figure out her password.
That doesn't sound easy. How can you possibly figure out her password?
If I had her computer, I might be able to guess it.
It will do no good to ask Mason for it back. She shook her head. It's an active investigation. He's not going to give it up. Boone ran his hand through his thick black hair, and it stood on end.
What if we cloned the hard drive? Then I could play around with it just as if it's her computer.
Surely he understood his request was highly unlikely. Mason won't want you poking around in his investigation.
Could you get into the evidence room and clone it?
He held up a large tanned hand.
Look, I realize I'm asking you to do something that could get you fired. It's not like we're tampering with evidence, though. I just want a copy. If I discover the password, Mason will thank us for helping him out with a case.
She cared way too much what he thought about her. This had been her downfall all her life. She wanted to be liked and admired. If she did this for him, he'd think she walked on water, and envisioning that made her heartbeat speed up. She liked her job, though, and she wanted to play fair with her employer. She gave a slow shake of her head. I can't do that, Boone. I'd like to help you, but it wouldn't be right. He sagged back in the chair.
I didn't think you would. I'm sorry I asked, but I'm desperate. I don't think the sheriff will be able to figure this out without my help.
Dana took a sip of her coffee. I have an online backup of my entire computer. Do you think Allison had anything like that? His hazel eyes brightened.
I hadn't even thought of that. I know she was crazy about making sure she didn't lose any files, but Mason didn't mention a hard drive backup.
Maybe she did. This isn't a hard drive. It's a backup in the cloud. We could try several popular services. You'd have to know what password she used for that, too, but it would be a place to start. Login is usually the person's email. He grabbed his plate and coffee. Come with me. She took the rest of her sandwich and followed him down the hall to a small bedroom. It was scrupulously neat and held only a pine log bed, matching dresser, and a small corner desk with a laptop. A blue and red Ohio Star quilt covered the queen-size bed. An oval rag rug was on the right side of the bed closest to the closet. The room held Boone's scent, an enticing aroma of man and spicy cologne. The top of the dresser was bare, except for a picture of a pretty young woman who looked vaguely like him around the eyes and mouth. She stopped and stared at it. Your sister? His mouth twisted, and the sunshine streaming through the window threw the scar on his face into sharp relief.
Yes, that's Renee.
Dana's chest squeezed. She'd been so young. She was beautiful. I love the laughter in her eyes. I bet she was one of those people who lifted your spirits whenever you were around her.
She was.
His voice was choked, but he strode past the dresser and went to the laptop.
What are some of the online backup services?
She named the top one and watched him call up a window. Just click Forgot Password and see if it accepts her email address. Do that until you find a service that recognizes it.
Good idea.
The computer keyboard clacking stopped.
Not that one. What's another one?
She named another. That's the service I use. He called it up. It recognized her email. Try the most likely password. I know they say not to use the same password for multiple sites, but it's tempting to do so you remember it. Intent on the screen, he didn't look at her and nodded.
Maybe her birthday.
He tried that and shook his head.
I should have known that was too easy.
They tried several other passwords, but nothing worked. Boone stared at the screen. It's going to lock us out after another failed attempt. Dana felt a sense of deja vu. Some hint was so close to being able to remember. She and Allison had been friends a long time. In high school, they'd called her Alley Cat. Dana moved to his side and tried to ignore his scent. Try Alley Cat, no space between the two words, and capitalize the first letter of each word. Add the last two digits of the year she was born. He nodded.
That's it, Dana. You did it.
He grabbed her and pulled her into a hug on his lap. His lips brushed her cheek and the corner of her lip. Time stuttered and slowed until all she saw was the gold flecks in his hazel eyes. She could drown in those eyes. His grin faded, and he leaned forward a fraction. Her lids fluttered and started to lower until his arms came around her waist, and he set her on her feet.
Let's see what we can find out now.
His impersonal words were as cold as a rainy November day. What had happened between Monday and now? Chapter 26. What had he been thinking? While seeing Esther had allowed him to forgive her, it had also been a reminder of what he might experience again if he let Dana get too close. The hurt in her eyes when he turned away had been a knife to his chest, though, and he called himself every kind of coward under the sun. But he still couldn't bring himself to look